this truth of the head. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob in your life.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. We're taking our personhood march across the country, and in just a moment, we'll go to South Carolina to find out about their Right to Life Act with the sponsors that are in the House and the Senate. Fascinating information. But first, this. Over the next week, we'll talk about Ann Coulter's claim that Mitt Romney was not guilty when he introduced homosexual marriage in the state of Massachusetts. What Mitt Romney did was he ordered state officials to issue homosexual marriage licenses, and Ann Coulter is saying that's not his fault. He had no choice. You always have a choice to do right or wrong. She says he had no choice. The Massachusetts State Supreme Court ordered him to implement homosexual marriage. That is not true. I've just read the Massachusetts Supreme Court opinion, the Goodridge opinion, issued in 2003, and they ordered the state legislature, quote, to take such action as it may deem appropriate, unquote. They did not order the governor. In fact, they never once in the entire ruling mentioned the governor. They didn't even mention him. Ann Coulter and all those many Christian leaders who are ignoring Mitt Romney, authorizing tax-funded elective abortions in Massachusetts, tax-funded surgical elective abortions. They're ignoring his socialist health care plan, RomneyCare, and they're ignoring that he implemented homosexual marriage. And so more on that later in the next few shows. But right now, let's go to South Carolina and, in fact, Columbia Christians for Life. Steve Leffeman. Steve, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Thanks, Bob, for having me on.
So much is happening around the country, Steve. You're aware of the personhood march all over this nation?
Yes, sir, and I thank God for the growth and the understanding and vision to vest personhood at fertilization with no exceptions as a way to end the child murder Holocaust we've had in this country for now 36-plus years.
Yes, and for decades, the pro-life movement has really been hijacked by secular humanists who want to regulate the killing of innocent children. And when you try to regulate murder, it'd be like regulating rape or regulating incest. It's absolutely immoral, and of course, it backfires. So, Steve, that's been happening, and you're familiar with that battle. Right at Columbia Christians for Life, are you familiar with the battle between the regulators and the personhood camp?
Yes, absolutely. God's requirement for us, and this is certainly something we as Christians should understand, that God's requirement for murder is justice, not regulation. And as you're familiar, Bob, all the wait 24 hours and then kill the baby, sign a piece of paper, and then kill the baby, all that is not what God requires concerning establishing justice for the unborn. And I'm thankful that, you know, Montana, as you certainly have helped publicize, the Montana Senate has passed a constitutional amendment. The North Dakota House before that passed a personhood bill. Here in South Carolina, we are going the personhood bill route and have bills both in the South Carolina House and the Senate.
And so we want to get into those details, but also let's just add quickly, Maryland's Representative Don Dwyer has introduced a Maryland personhood amendment, and we recently had the president of Georgia Right to Life on, Dan Becker, and he has been strongly opposing efforts to regulate abortion, and they have a major personhood push there in their state legislature. And so, Steve, there's a lot happening all over the country. There's a personhood petition drive in Mississippi, and so we're excited. Now, talk to us about South Carolina, but first back up. give us a little history. What have the last years been like in the pro-life battle in South Carolina? Has it been like other states in the status quo that groups just wanted to regulate child killing? Has that been the norm there?
That's been the lead, you know, pro-life organization. And I put quotation marks around pro-life. Sadly, most Christians and most pro-lifers look at, and which some Republican legislators are willing to hide behind the skirts of, is the South Carolina chapter of National Right to Life. If I could back up a little bit, I'd like to mention that Alabama is another state that has personhood legislation at least filed.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you all had a historic vote, statewide vote, on a personhood amendment there in Colorado. So there's a number of states that have introduced and to varying degrees had seen progress in the personhood legislation.
In fact, Steve, out here, we had, in a liberal state that elected a pro-abortion U.S. senator and a pro-abortion president, still, we had over 500,000 Coloradans vote to end all abortion, 585,000 Coloradans, and this is 40 years after abortion was legalized in our state. We are fighting. This is the Christian fight. The body of Christ has to raise up and stop this injustice of child killing, and we preach the gospel as we do it because God made us, and we have a right to life from Him, not from the delivery doctor or the hospital. Our right to life comes when we're created, not when we're born. And so as we teach people right from wrong and that it's wrong to kill children, we also remind them of their guilt before God, and they need to be forgiven in Jesus Christ. So that's the battle. And now back to South Carolina, Steve.
To be fair, and I've been on a journey myself, in the early 90s, I helped with the incremental effort. And my eyes began to be opened. I left the Republican Party in 96, got involved with what was then the U.S. Taxpayers Party. Then eventually when they compromised and when my eyes were opened on other matters as well, left the Constitution Party in, at the end of 2004. It was sometime around 97, I believe, when we began to work on a personhood effort here. I think what helped inspire me was a bill that Bob Dornan in California introduced in the U.S. Congress in 95. And it was a letter from Nellie Gray with March for Life about that I saw, interestingly enough, over at the South Carolina chapter of National Right to Life's office. And Nellie Gray was basically saying, this is something all pro-lifers can agree on. I don't remember the exact wording, but essentially she was affirming the personhood approach. And so in 97, I began to consider a state-level personhood bill. Of course, Bob Dornan had introduced his bill at the U.S. House level, the congressional level. And then when he left Congress, was defeated, Duncan Hunter picked it up. And there's been personhood legislation in the U.S. House at least since 95, and Duncan Hunter has brought it forward. Interestingly enough, it's never had to my knowledge, even a subcommittee hearing. But I ran some ideas by, I've talked to Herb Titus, who's a constitutional law scholar.
Right.
He's fairly well known, and he's a constitutional law author.
He's also worked to expose the lie that Mitt Romney was only doing what he had to do in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned Mitt Romney because he's going to be leading wolf in sheep's clothing in the next presidential election cycle, lying to Christians that he's pro-life, pro-family Christian when he's none of those things. But Herb Titus has helped with that battle also against Mitt Romney.
Herb helped me, and I was looking trying to design a state-level bill and was thinking of looking to both our state constitution and the federal constitution, and Herb's counsel was to look to our state constitution. And so we, you know, by the grace of God, we introduced a personhood bill in the House and Senate here in South Carolina in 98. It took us until 2001 to get our first hearing. It was defeated at the subcommittee level by a subcommittee that had a majority of Republicans. And the chair of that subcommittee was opposed to us. We finally passed the bill. It had another hearing in 2004 where it did pass the subcommittee level but was defeated at the full judiciary level by, in my opinion, a fraudulent voice vote. And finally, in 2005, it passed the subcommittee in the House, the Judiciary Committee in the House, right prior to the subcommittee vote. Our Attorney General had come out with a legal opinion that this bill, which we called the Right to Life Act of South Carolina, was constitutional on its face, although if applied to abortion, it would have to be adjudicated, which is no surprise. And it did pass out onto the floor, where unfortunately a fatal flaw rape exception amendment for the morning after pill was added on. The reasoning allegedly was that we would get more supporters, more votes in favor of the bill if we had that. Of course, once you do that, you completely gut the legal strategy, you undermine personhood. In fact, as I say, you fatally flaw it.
And that was part of the argument in Roe v. Wade.
Exactly.
That how could Texas claim that the fetus had a right to life when they had exceptions, for example, for rape? And the Supreme Court is saying you can't have it both ways. Either it's a baby, a person has a right to life, or you can kill it if the father is a criminal. And so Texas was hypocritical, and that gave this supposed consistent legal argument to the Supreme Court. And so it is so immoral, it is so destructive to undermine personhood, supposedly because you're trying to achieve personhood. It's a lie, it's wrong, and it's destructive.
That is something that we're still having to teach, and I know, certainly, Bob, you understand this, and the Lord's opened my eyes to understand this, but for those who are listening, and including pro-life folks who want to do the right thing but don't understand how that right thing means the Sixth Commandment with no exceptions, I'd like to read two quick excerpts from the Roe decision.
Sure.
For the purposes of those who are listening. The first deals with the assertion that personhood is what needs to be established, and this is in the text of the Roe decision.
So Harry Blackmun, who wrote Roe v. Wade, was a Republican U.S. Supreme Court justice, and by the way, the whole ruling was passed by a majority of Republican justices. But so go ahead, what did Harry Blackmun write?
This is mostly a quote. There's two words in here where I'm substituting for understanding, but the quote is, Texas argues that the fetus is a quote-unquote person within the language and meaning of the 14th Amendment. If this suggestion of personhood is established, the pro-abortion case, of course, collapses, for the fetus's right to life would then be guaranteed specifically by the amendment. And I've inserted the words Texas, pro-abortion, and 14th I've inserted for understanding. But in essence, if we establish personhood at fertilization with no exceptions, that is not only constitutional, that meets the requirement laid out in Roe v. Wade. In fact, one pro-life activist has said that exceptions to personhood are unconstitutional. And that's the lesson from Roe. As you said, if I can go on and address that life of the mother exception, this is a battle I think we haven't overcome here in South Carolina. But there was a footnote by Harry Blackmun, as you mentioned his name earlier, it was a footnote that addressed the life of the mother exception that was in the Texas law that was being adjudicated in the Roe case. And Blackmun wrote, quote, when Texas urges that a fetus is entitled to 14th Amendment protection as a person, it faces a dilemma. Neither in Texas nor in any other state are all abortions prohibited. Despite broad prescription, an exception always exists. But if the fetus is a person who is not to be deprived of life without due process of law, and if the mother's condition is the sole determinant, does not the Texas exception appear to be out of line with the amendment's command? Which is really a common sense thing. Either you're a person or you're not.
Right.
We ban slavery, either we're going to free all the slaves or we're not.
Mm-hmm.
And we failed to learn that lesson in South Carolina in 2005. And I think I should have made more of an effort to educate on that point. The the sponsor of the House bill this year in 2009 understands that. I wish he was stronger on that position, but he understands that there can't be any exceptions.
Mm-hmm. So, Steve, thank you for taking this fundamental truth and doing your best. We here in Colorado, where American Right to Life is headquartered, we are doing what we can to teach Christians first that you honor God, you obey God. That's first. Then secondarily, you try to figure out how do we influence our culture so that children are not molested, children are not murdered, so that people are not robbed. And that's secondary. First, you honor God, and then you have something to share with the people around you. If you don't honor God, if your first goal is to get a law passed or to win an election, well, then very likely you'll end up being part of the problem, because you will compromise right and wrong, and you'll be on the side of evil just because you're trying to win an election. And so it's encouraging to me, Steve, that you are one of a growing army of pro-life Christians around the country who are teaching people, first we honor God, and there are no exceptions in his command, do not murder. There are no exceptions. Yeah.
Amen.
All right. So, hey, by the way, earlier you mentioned Bob Dornan and Nellie Gray, and, of course, they have both been in the battle for many years, and Nellie Gray recently came out with an analysis of the partial birth abortion ruling, and she clearly stated that that ruling was immoral, that we should not celebrate it. It wasn't a good thing. It was an evil thing, because the ruling Gonzalez v. Carhart states you cannot pull the baby out to the neck and kill it, but you can pull a baby out to the belly button and kill it, or you could kill that same baby in so many other ways that they recommend. And so, Steve, that was a brutally wicked ruling that Christian leaders wanted us to celebrate and send in more money, because look at the victories we're having, like the 15 years we wasted on this partial birth abortion fiasco. And so I'm so thankful that Nellie Gray actually published an article against that ruling, that it was not a success. And Bob Dornan, you could hear him on American Right to Life's website giving a strong endorsement for the Focus on the Strategy DVD. And he said he learned 7 simple words that he'll use to evaluate pro-life legislation, and they are, and then you could kill the baby. It's a bad law if it ends with, and then you could kill the baby.
That's right. And I would encourage Christian principled pro-lifers, Christian principled pro-lifers, to not be distracted by the abortion regulation mentality and focus. I would encourage them to focus on personhood. And there are 6 states that we know of in 2009, Alabama, Georgia,
Maryland,
Montana,
yep,
North Dakota, and South Dakota, who are doing this effort. And none of these bills are cookie cutter. They're tailored, you know, to the design of the originators, and each bill is different in
but they're all
in its
principled
language. But the
right,
but the
they're all principled bills.
They're principled bills, and the common denominator is they all vest legal personhood, which is going back to the
now,
quote from the Roe v. Wade decision is what this legal strategy entails.
Now, Steve, there is drama going on in North Dakota where the Catholic Conference there and the state affiliate for Focus on the Family are getting in, and they're attempting to gut the bill with the idea that they would support it with some changes, and they want to limit the scope of the bill to only family law, and they want to literally include exceptions. For example, you could not use this bill to charge a woman with committing a crime. And so, of course, they are gutting the very notion of personhood to say, well, this man, this Jewish man, he's a person, but you can't use that knowledge to charge someone with committing a crime if they kill him. you're destroying your own position. And so we want to encourage the personhood people in North Dakota not to be compromised by those who are committed to regulation and those who believe that you cannot possibly win a battle. That's what they said about slavery. That's what they said about the Holocaust. You know, who could stop the German machine? Who could change the economy that was based on slave labor? Well, people who knew right from wrong stood up, like William Wilberforce, Harriet Tubman, others, and they fought against injustice. And those who were Christians did the world a great service by saying that this is wrong because God created us, and we need to repent before God.
We need to glorify. We need to keep it. I think you were addressing this earlier, Bob. We need to keep our eyes on the Lord and keep our principal focus on glorifying Him. Mm. We're just carrying out His will and His mission and seeking to obey His word in this particular area, this vitally important area of giving protection, legal protection to the sanctity of human life, life mm-hmm. created in His image. And again, I would encourage listeners, we've got 6 states out of 50 who are pursuing personhood so far. And Bob, you and I understand this, but there's really three varieties, if you will, three different methods that a personhood strategy can be pursued just from the legal or procedural mm-hmm. or legislative standpoint. A state legislature can pursue a bill for a statutory change in that state's code of laws, like we're doing here in South Carolina, right. like North Dakota is doing, or a legislature can pursue a constitutional amendment, mm-hmm. like Montana is doing and like Maryland is doing,
right.
which goes through the legislature first. Usually it's a supermajority, say 2/3, then it goes out to the people at the next election time, and the people have to vote 50% plus one to pass it. And the third variety, of course, which you all made history doing this past November, was a ballot initiative mm-hmm. to get a constitutional amendment on the books. I don't know, you would know probably better than I do whether a law can be passed that way by ballot initiative. I don't know if that's the case or not.
Well, out here in Colorado, I actually don't recall. I should recall, but we turned in 131,000 signatures to get this amendment on the ballot, and while we lost, we still doubled to tripled the supposed number, the conventional wisdom of how many people would vote for a total ban on abortion. And this, Steve, comes from pro-life groups who say, oh, you're not going to get more than 10% or 15%. Well, we had over 500,000 voters. We had 27% of the people vote to ban all abortion by a constitutional amendment. And that was with opposition from National Right to Life and all the major pro-life leaders, pro-life organizations, religious leaders.
And the Catholic Conference didn't support it either.
No, the Archbishop here in Denver opposed Colorado's personhood amendment. I mean, he flat out opposed it. And so did, you know, name the major pro-life leaders, Christian leaders, just name them. And the vast majority opposed it, as did all the major Republican candidates, the so-called pro-life candidates, like John McCain, who's a pro-abort, and like our U.S. Senate candidate, and his name is Bob Schaefer, that pretty much down the line, they opposed it. And so Planned Parenthood was able to outspend the personhood campaign, maybe, you know, 5 or 10 to 1. And still, we got 27% of the voters in a liberal state like Colorado to call for the banning of all child killing. So imagine what we could have done if the people who say they're pro-life would have put their pride behind them and fought for personhood.
I think 500,000 people voting to establish personhood and ban all child killing is a noteworthy accomplishment, and it's an excellent, it's a historical benchmark, and I would encourage listeners, if they would like to pursue one of those three options, finding a legislator to introduce a bill, finding a legislator to introduce an amendment, finding out how to start a ballot initiative in their state, if their state allows that option. Not all states have initiatives.
That's right. Now, Steve, we're starting to run out of time. In South Carolina, the Right to Life Act of South Carolina, that was filed with 45 House sponsors. Is that right?
Yes, sir. That was the largest number we had had at introduction. We now have 52. The Senate version, I believe, was filed with 10, and now we have 11 co-sponsors on the Senate bill, the companion bill. The House and the Senate bill have identical statutory language.
Steve, this is amazing. This is historic. Now, you're with Columbia Christians for Life. Which pro-life bill or leader would you say is primarily responsible for getting this many to co-sponsor this bill?
Well, in this case, the House member who sponsored the bill did just a wonderful job. I think the Lord has gifted him with an ability to be a person who has some good people skills, and he went around and spent a good deal of effort going around to his colleagues.
His name is?
Liston Barfield.
Barfield, and then there's also Senator Lee Bright, right?
Senator Lee Bright on the Senate side. But I credit, of course, I give glory to the Lord giving favor to Liston Barfield, but Barfield went around to his colleagues and at introduction in February had 45 co-sponsors.
Wow. Now, Steve, the last thing, we only have a minute or two. As far as where rights come from, I know that you believe that you know that rights come from God.
Yes.
They don't come from the government, right?
Exactly.
Does a nation have the right to set aside God's law and put exceptions to do not murder?
Of course not.
A nation doesn't have that right. And so a subtext, a battle within the pro-life movement and even within the personhood movement is this idea of states' rights and that a state would have the right to regulate abortion, or that no other nation or other state could have any say. And it seems to me that a nation doesn't have the right to set aside do not murder.
No.
And so no state would have the right, and with impunity, say to all other governing bodies in the world, you have to turn your head because we're going to legalize the killing of Jews. So if a nation, if Iran started to exterminate Christians, they have no right to do that. As the rights of nations, they have no such right. And so I know there's an argument that abortion is a state's rights issue, but I think that undermines that our rights and authority come from God.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Steve Leffeman with Columbia Christians for Life. May God bless you, Steve.
Thank you, Bob. You too.
Okay. So Steve has been in the battle for all these many years, and I'm so thrilled to be a part of American Right to Life because of their vision on winning this war. And then in Arvada, Colorado, Maranatha Christian Center, what a neat school in Arvada. And our website is kgov.com. May God bless you.